Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say!
Welcome to Filthy Shambles, Season 3, Episode 35. It's another three-point Monday for Tottenham supporters around the world. I'm joined by the ever-cheerful Chris, who's probably euphoric this Monday afternoon. How you doing, mate?
Yeah, I'm very good. I mean, I am the perfect person to have on after a 4-0 away win, so I can have a good old moan and rant, can't I? So, it's all good the last couple of weeks, so long may that continue.
Well, I mean, if we start on the weekend, you know, there's been quite a lot made around. This is actually coming from me rather than it being things I've heard. But you know, Aston Villa had to play Ajax. They had tired legs. They played five at the back. They got it tactically wrong. They kind of bottled it individually and collectively. I don't care. I do not care about the opposition. It's very relevant. We were playing Aston Villa, who were above us, were 5 points ahead of us before the game. That's right, isn't it? They were 5 points ahead. Yeah, and yes, now we're cutting back a bit. But this has nothing to do with Aston Villa. It's all been about Tottenham showing up and turning someone over convincingly, clinically, effectively, ruthlessly even. Which is exactly what we delivered, even though the first half was a little bit messy, a little bit competitive. We weren't quite getting it right in the final third with the final ball. But I don't know how you felt, but watching the game, I never felt like we didn't have it within us. And it was it's that confidence sometimes that you get off the back of watching Tottenham. Which is really hard for Spurs fans to accept, because obviously we kind of sit there nervously thinking we're going to get turned over or we're not going to turn up, even though the body of evidence this season would suggest something completely different. We just have this kind of collective inability to disassociate ourselves from the past. How are you feeling in that first half, though, if we start there, considering the pressure?
If I could just start on what you said initially about Aston Villa. I mean, we've watched for years now where we've played Europa League football on a Thursday night, playing in some godforsaken place in, I don't know, Moldova or Slovenia or somewhere, and then we've come back on the Sunday, played Fulham at home and lost 1-0, and then we don't get those exceptions to the, the fact of travel, you know, it's hard playing Thursday, Sunday. They've had to change their tactics to try and suit the opposition, blah, blah, and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, that was up to Emery. You know, he's got such a good record over us. He just assumed that whatever tactics he threw against them would work. And sort of Danny Murphy even mentioned it on Match of the Day last night. Like, he was happy to go with Watkins and Bailey up against Van de Ven and Romero. And he thought that his two would beat our two, but... I mean, Van de Ven lasted like, 48 minutes or something?
Yeah.
But even when Dragosin came on, he was very, if at all, tested at all. But and I think the only time he was tested was one misplaced pass by himself. Other than that, he barely had anything to do.
It's funny with Dragosin because I hardly noticed him, which is great because it's apart almost from the misplaced pass.
Almost a perfect game to come into for him. Obviously, we hope that Van de Ven's fine and he's all right. Like I say, there should be no excuse. It should all be about how well we did as opposed to how badly Villa set up, played, lost their heads, given the John McGinn interview that came out in the papers on the Sunday morning saying it was one of their biggest game in recent history. and they absolutely just froze, and we just sort of.
That sounds like something I used to tweet every time Spurs kind of had to any given game. To be fair, at home, I'd tweet something like, "This is the biggest game in our history," and people would actually react to it as if I was being serious. But
or any time the early game affected us in a positive way, and we were then at home,
and we had to win, yeah,
and we had to win, and then we didn't, which I've seen so many times over the years. But yeah, going back to the actual game itself, even the commentators were surprised at like how slow Villa were coming out of the blocks. And again, you could probably argue you could have blew the whistle for kickoff and then blew the whistle again for half time, because there was very little actually happened in the first half.
Yeah.
But I think again, when we couldn't be bothered to actually pass it to one of our own players and passed it straight to them, I mean, that was the only time where there was, and even then, Van de Ven, I mean, he must have had almost a 10-yard head start on him, and he still outran him and won the ball and won a goal kick. And then I think the other one, Romero, sorted himself out after a sort of sloppy pass. But that was about it, really. It was sort of cancelled each other out. And even, like, as I was on about with the two centre-back, we go back all through the last few games to talk about what dodgy, in quotes, dodgy defence. It's only set pieces that seem to be the issue. If you go back through all these games, I can't even remember the last time we conceded a goal in open play. It's just... constant either penalties or free kicks that we seem to concede. And the argument was that Villa's best chance of the first half was from the set piece, from the corner that Luca Dean's header that actually came off his shoulder and went...
The one that looked quite prepared, looked like close, they've done their homework.
Yeah.
In training.
And that was arguably their best chance. In open play, we snuffed out anything.
What do you think, actually, just sticking on Villa at the minute, because I was quite fearful of Ollie Watkins, who's been absolutely fire this season, and someone I would gladly take at Tottenham. But he seemed to... I know he was offside for that one chance that he had. Like, it was a one-on-one, basically, and he was offside. But I don't know whether he subconsciously or consciously was aware of that, so he decided to pass the ball rather than slot it in.
That was unbelievable. I'm not sure what he was thinking there.
Yeah, what was going on there?
I mean, as you say, he was at least a couple of yards offside, but I just think their tactics killed him. It was literally a bank of five, wasn't it, at the back? So, the likes of Matty Cash and Luca Dean couldn't. And again, Danny Murphy was all over it on Match of the Day 2 last night. I don't know if you've seen it. But he talked. He was very similar, wasn't he? He wasn't about how bad Villa were. He was well into... I mean, obviously, probably there's a little bit of bias there, but how well we played, how well we pressed them.
Pressing.
And I just think we suffocated them and they couldn't get out, which meant with Bailey having to play almost as a forward, I've never seen him play as a forward all season when I've watched Villa. He's played off the wing or... And I just think that killed
Chris? Okay, you're completely bang on. But do you know what it does kill? It kills all the mythology around Tottenham only having one plan, Tottenham being found out, Tottenham being one-dimensional, Ange Postecoglou not having more in his toolbox. All these little things that crop up when people have this inability to just... deal with a loss or a defeat or drop points, you know, over the space of a game, sometimes two games, you know, all these things that kind of creep in because everyone wants to give you this definitive conclusion when the reality is we need blocks of 40 games, blocks of 80 games to really understand how good Postecoglou can be for this football club and how much we can evolve. If you're going to do that, if you're going to react to games and go, well, he's not, you know, Postecoglou, he's not giving us what we need. This isn't the SPL, blah, blah, blah. If you're going to react like that, then you can react the complete opposite way by saying, well, okay, let's react joyfully and positively to what we did to Aston Villa. And we did exactly that. We did adjust. We did, our in-game management was on point. Our pressing was absolutely relentless, you know, and that does force a reaction from the opposition. And if you're unsure about how to react to that, if you're a little bit rattled, and therefore you lose discipline and you get players sent off, or you kind of lose your your shape. That's because of the opposition being as good as they were. And Spurs, in this pressure game, did not look like they were playing a pressure game. They looked completely comfortable. Untidy, maybe, in that first half. But, you know, football isn't often, it is not a pretty, you know, a pretty game. You know, sometimes it can be a little bit fragmented until someone finds momentum and then produces a bit of quality and sustains that quality over an entire half, which is exactly what we did. So full marks to Spurs. And I'm not even like, I'm not kind of like Julie Andrews dancing on a heel. Do you know what I mean? Singing. I'm not like getting carried away. But as Postecoglou said many times, why not enjoy it? Why not get carried away? Because this is what we've been asking Spurs to do. Like, are we just better away from... I mean, I know our away form has dipped substantially from early season. Our home form is all equally erratic, far more erratic than it should be. But are we just a better away team because we know that the opposition can't low block because they have to attack Tottenham, right? To have a chance of getting the points, you have to be on the front foot. And then obviously at home, we've got teams that just defend, and we get frustrated. Like, are we just a better side away from home?
I would have agreed with that. However, my old man found a stat last night where scored the same amount of goals home and away and conceded the same amount of goals most home and away. It's within one goal. So I think we're goal difference altogether is plus 20. But if you split it across home and away, it's literally plus 10, both home and away.
Okay, so that is quite interesting then, statistically.
So I would have gone with that we are better away for home because the home side has to come, or more times than not, because they're in front of their own supporters, we need to come out and try and play, not just as Villa ended up doing, playing a block of five on the edge of their own box. I mean, it was literally the complete opposite to what they would usually do, where they would play a high line, push people as far up the pitch as possible. It was literally, they couldn't, I mean, they were almost shaking hands with Martinez in goal. That was how far, how deep they were. It was, I can't imagine he'll ever do that ever again. Emery, he must sit there and think he's just dropped an almighty bollock. But on the flip side, I think it just shows you the respect that he put towards us.
Yeah.
Because if you think he didn't do that for Man City or Arsenal and he turned both of them over, and I can't remember the last time anyone went to Villa and put four past them.
I think that was the first time that Aston Villa haven't scored at home under Emery. Right. Hopefully I haven't made that up, but I think
it says a lot, doesn't it? Really?
Yeah. So, I mean, a clean sheet has to, you know, it's another big positive from the game. You know, not only to score four, but to also not concede anything. You know, Big Vic, not really put under that much pressure. I don't think he didn't have much to do.
When he ended up getting stamped on the head by Zaniolo, I think that's the only incident, and even then it went wide. But I mean, let's be honest, we do have a very, very good record there by last season. You know, it's not the first time I've seen him go there and put four past them.
Yeah.
Albeit under sort of lesser managers and lesser sides, but you know, we do have I remember a Gareth Bale hat trick when we won 4-0. I'm sure we won 4-0 there even under Conte when we qualified for Champions League.
We did, mate. And I remember that because I was with all the Fighting Cock boys in a cottage in the middle of nowhere in the countryside, all intoxicated. I think it would be the legal way to describe our headspace. And we were watching the game and we absolutely smashed Villa that day.
I think we scored four in the second half that day as
well. Yeah, it was epic, and the celebrations, it was like we were actually there. It was, you know, when you're watching football with friends or family, it's so much better. And there was like this kind of community kind of euphoric uplift watching Spurs slap them. And the Scum lost, I want to say they lost against Brighton that day. And that's when we started believing we might catch them, you know. We yeah. might catch them. There's a chance that something might happen here.
One of the goals might even have been, the one goal in that game might have even been similar to the Sun one, I think.
Kulusevski
cutting in from the right.
There was some bangers on that occasion. There was some decent finishes. We'll get to that. What I'm thinking is we can work through player by player, at least the ones that we think are worthy of a little mention. I mean, we spoke about Radu coming on, performing very well, very confidently. Okay, you made a mistake, but if you tend to remember one thing and then you're fine with everything else, that tends to mean that the player performed exactly how you wanted him to, without any unnecessary drama. And for someone who's had to come on very late in games previously, he's mobile, right? He gets about quickly. He's aware of what's around him. He just looks like he fits in, which is exactly what you would expect from Tottenham these days with the way that we acquire players.
I think the way you said it before, when you said you barely realised he was there, I think that just says it all. And it'll do him the world of good as well to get, I don't know, what was it, 40-odd minutes under his belt? Because, he'll have come in and thought that they might have got a chance at, straight away, but he's had to sit there and bide his time. And, the next two or three games, I mean, as we say, we don't want Van de Ven to be injured at all, but if he has to step in, they're not the worst games at the moment for him to come into.
We do have a good run, don't we? And the thing is, it's difficult in the Premier League to say, oh, these are easy games. You're quite right. They're the games that I worry about more. I don't worry about Tottenham turning up against big, big clubs in big pressure games. Chelsea aside this season, I think we've kind of turned up for the rest of them. Obviously, Luton. We got Fulham next but then we got Luton at the end of the month.
West Ham and then Forest.
Exactly. So West Ham could be tricky because they've been absolute dog shit, but you know what they're going to do when they turn up.
They'll always turn up against us, regardless of where they are in the league.
It's another test. They want to get something out of the game, as they always want to end our season. That's obviously the little narrative that they kind of live by. No excuses from Tottenham. We should be turning over all, because if we win all those games, that is, again, all theoretical at this point, that's a lot of points. And we've seen how quickly things change in the Premier League this season. You just have to put a run together because it's so closely fought and everybody has to play everyone else. Do you know what I mean? We've got to play all the top teams. We've got to play Man City and Liverpool and the Scum and the Scum have got to play Man City, and there's all these combinations, and of Villa are still involved in there.
I was going to say, everything. I'm pretty sure Villa have still got to play Liverpool.
All of them, I think.
So, it just shows how big a result that was yesterday.
Massive, massive result. Let's we don't have to do a blow by blow of the game. I mean, Match of the Day's done that already. Lots of other podcasts will probably delve into the. Into the tactics a little bit more, but I really wanted to focus on the players, because the one good thing about Tottenham at the minute, regardless of what the board of directors are doing and everything else that's happening around the football, we've bought into these players, and the last few games have been not great in terms of being convinced about the collective. But I know we've spoken about this. I'm sure lots of people have been speaking about how there's players coming back into the fold, and Maddison is slowly beginning to find that tempo again, and one or two others. It was a big, big improvement against Villa, because it wasn't just Maddison who's really found that level again. Having Destiny look as sharp as he's been, having Porro on the flip side.
I don't know whether it was on our chat or another one, but I thought that was Destiny's best game for quite a while. I really did. And it just shows what a difference having both full backs playing does to this, to the side. They're so important to how we play.
Massively.
And they're just, when they're in together, they are brilliant. Like, they really are.
It's just the dynamic of the team suffers greatly if one of them is missing. And again, if we're talking about this, Chris, then the club must be well aware that they have to do something about having players that fit that mould. You know, you can't ask Emerson to play in that position. You can't. I mean, you know, Davies and Emerson have played in those positions, and there's something that's lacking from the team. And then being critical of either of them because they're not able to do what these two guys can do, Poro and Destiny, it feels a little bit harsh because they're just, you know. And then obviously I know the onus is on Ange to maybe change the way we play, but he's very stubborn in that we're going to keep playing the way that we're meant to play until it's completely organic and natural for everybody. And I get that, but you kind of need the right players in the right position. So that's a long running. I don't want to call it a saga, but it's something that needs a conclusion at some point, hopefully in the summer. But having them back really kind of solidified the way that we were going forward and bringing the ball forward. And Porro's an incredible defender as well. And obviously Destiny's all action. So the defence, you know, losing Mickey, the fact that he was injured at half-time and they got Radu to train during the break and then Mickey tried to run it off and he couldn't. To me, that suggests that it isn't serious. And I don't know. That's really kind of very basic medical analysis from me.
I kind of went with the same thoughts on that because obviously they made a big deal of it on Sky. Oh, Dragerson's warming up, so someone must be coming off. And then, there's been no subs. And then, obviously, he makes that block, doesn't he, even though he was offside. I think Bailey was offside.
Yeah.
And he sort of full stretch blocks it to go over the bar. And then, obviously, doesn't recover. But, no, hopefully it's just, you know, hopefully he felt something and just thought, nah, best to be safe and sorry. We've got Dragerson sitting there. He can come on and do a job.
100%. And talking about someone doing a job, a lot of annoying story coverage on Romero before this game, you know. Then it's almost like when journalists buy into the memes and the fan narrative on players, right? Like and I'm also talking about big accounts that kind of amplify some of these story arcs around Romero being a hothead. Romero, you know, he's always going to go in with a crunching tackle, etc., etc., etc. So there was a lot of eyes on Kuti before this game in terms of, is he going to lose his head and try and murder Matty Cash? Is he going to do something stupid? You know, he made the mistake. I think I can remember one mistake, and he recovered for it. But otherwise, he was phenomenal. Again, like those two at the back.
Hasn't been booked in 9 games now, I don't think.
And no one talks about that. Is that not newsworthy then? Like, do you know what I'm saying?
And I think it was like maybe 3 games ago, he'd only given away 16 fouls all season. Nobody talks about that either.
No one does.
That would have been, it's just, the guy's just unbelievable. He's just a brilliant, brilliant centre-back.
He is. And I think, you know, being a vice-captain, and, you know, if you're going to do the eye test, then do the eye test for all the centre-backs in the country. Also, have a look at some of the decision-making when it comes to some of the fouls that don't get given and then certain players, not just Spurs players, but certain players with, I guess, a certain narrative associated to them do get booked or do get red cards.
I mean, I'm with you. I was concerned that something might happen with him and Cash yesterday, but thankfully he rose above that and left it for Ben. I think it was Benton Kerr at the end who did a little.
He wasn't he? Got a little cheeky one in, which was great to see. But the midfield, the defence. It's interesting because the defence are so good individually when you look at them, and even collectively, and yet we have. somehow allow teams to kind of, like you said earlier, creep in and get behind us, usually with or via set pieces, which kind of makes you worry that there's something wrong about the way that we're setting up and defending. But they were absolutely...
I'd like to know how many full games that four have played this season.
Ah, yeah.
I bet it's not many.
It isn't, mate. It won't be. Considering what we've been through this year, it's no wonder that we have had a frustrating time, I guess, pondering what could have been, just based on the fact that, you know, we did lose a fair chunk of our spine for a period of time. That's, you know, we could have still been in the title race. Like, it's just been one of those seasons, right? So
I'm sure it's only been one game since the Chelsea game.
That someone would let us know, but that is amazing if true. And then obviously once we got them all back, Mickey goes off. So it's a funny cursed season. But you know what? The thing about Spurs and the thing about our manager is we just crack on with it. We did well in January to bring in Radu, and we've got cover, and the players that don't quite fit in still get selected and still do a pretty good job most of the time, even though it's a limited job.
Let's be honest, Emerson did a job a million times better playing centre back than he has done playing as his actual position.
Yeah, yeah.
So and obviously Ben.
It's confidence though, Chris, as well. I think it's the belief in when you haven't got a manager who's constantly slagging off everything about the club and the players and whatever else, directly or indirectly. It just. There's a synergy that has to be fed, and it's fed by the leaders in the team and the main kingpin, which is the manager. And, you know, if it's a season to recover from the past, in terms of our recovery, it's been a bloody good one in terms of where we're at and what we're outputting. Even if it's not perfect all of the time, it's still pretty good, you know, to go fully Larry David, pretty good. But there are moments when you know that things need to be fine-tuned a little bit further. And talking of fine-tuning, you know, the midfield has been under par for a few weeks. It's just been a little bit... I guess it's Maddison trying to rediscover his earlier season form. It's Bentancur just on this long journey to recovery. I think he did well when he came on. I think Basuma is quietly rediscovering his composure. He's quietly becoming effective again in the way that you want him to be without, you know, too much unnecessary drama on his part that's kind of cost him with suspensions. And let's start really with the Sar boy, however you want to, you know, describe him. Sar's ability on the ball, off the ball, attacking space, darting runs. Don't anyone listening to this, I am not comparing him to Dele Alli. Different types of players. But they both know how to effectively use the space in front of them. They're like elite space invaders. At least Dele was in his time at Spurs when he was at his prime. And Sar has that ability as well, you know. He can create by moving into that space with or without the ball. And he just offers up an opportunity to get forward. He's the only midfielder that you could argue is forward carrying, right? With the ball at his feet. And his cross for Maddison for the 1-0 was beyond sublime. It was like, I had to check, is that like artificial intelligence created content? Did that actually get delivered to Maddison in that space that perfectly? It was just absolutely fantastic. I mean, what are you making of his progression this season?
He's just making himself almost undroppable.
Hmm.
I mean, I know he was left out last week, and Ange sort of said he's been nursing a bit of a back issue since coming back from the African Cup of Nations.
I didn't expect him to be in the starting lineup because of that.
If you looked at the players that he brought in and the ones he left out, there was just more pace and legs, energy, I thought, he brought into the side. And I think that just showed in the performance because you needed, I think you needed the sort of pace and power, like Porro coming in at right back, Saw coming in midfield, and so Johnson Baverna is probably a little bit like for like, but I think Johnson deserved to. But anyway, going back to Saw, I think Roy Keane called it one of the crosses of the season, and you can't really argue with it. It was just like they're the sort of deliveries that sort of going back to obviously living in Newcastle, what Les Ferdinand used to get off Keith Gillespie back in the '90s. Like it was sort of like he couldn't have put it any better if he tried. Like literally on a sixpence from just to sort of nod it, tap it in. It was just, but it's just his all round play. I can't think of a sort of a negative part of his play at the moment when he's on the pitch. He's constantly making a difference, and I think he has to be, for me, he has to be the first midfielder on the. Almost on the team sheet now.
Yeah,
and then you pick around it.
It's credit again.
You could wax lyrical all day about him. He's just becoming that good. And we'd be very lucky to get him for like what? How much would we pay for him? Next to nothing.
Well, this is what I was going to say, mate. That again, we have to credit. I'm guessing Paratici, or just the work that we are now doing. Which, you know, is you can be overly critical with transfers, right? Because I think Spurs, there's this big thing made, and I can't believe I'm having to caveat this, but this is not in defence of Daniel Levy, in case anyone gets triggered, or Enoch, or whatever else. But, you know, in this day and age, everything is magnified. And if you go way back, pre-Daniel Levy, pre-Enoch, all Spurs ever did was just buy players that were Spursy players, like Davy Ginola, you know, players that they felt fitted a Spursy in the positive way, right? In the way that it's meant to be, like flair players, creative players, players that are absolutely brilliant on the ball. Fuck the rest of the team, the defence, midfield, everything else. There's no spine, but we've got Ginola in there, we'll be all right. Tottenham's transfer...
For every Ginola, there was a Goran Bundžićević.
Oh, there was more than one, and this is the problem. Like things have changed substantially in football, like following football, and within football clubs, in the way that the academies work for every given football club, and the way the players clubs go out and sign players. All of it has changed. It's practically a science now. If it's kind of data led, which it is for Spurs, and you know we tried it before with Mitchell and his black box, and you know we've had directors of football and little black books as well, and just there's a million ways of doing it, right? Harry Redknapp getting on the phone to one of his favourite agents and like wallop, we've signed the player. And it doesn't necessarily always work for every club. You can think you're buying the right player for the football club, and it just will not work. And there could be so many variables. And I think what Spurs are doing is that they're getting rid of the risk. There doesn't appear to be... I'm not saying there's zero risk with who we're signing, because, you know, one of your favourite players, Brian Gill, or Hill, however you want to pronounce his name. I'm never sure about any given pronunciation, but he's especially... Like, we can't get them all right, and that's fine, as long as you're not spending 60 million on a Lo Celso or an Ndombele. And I think Spurs, credit to them, because we get onto it later about this quote around the £100 million player that we're never going to sign, according to Postecoglou, because I think that's I've got a strong opinion about what that actually means, and I think people got carried away with that quote. I think we should celebrate the fact that we are signing the right player, regardless of that price tag.
Just to go on to that, second, why would he come out and say that we are?
Thank you. I mean, it's so that's the first thing I thought of. Imagine Postecoglou saying, "Oh no, we would definitely spend £100 million on a player that we thought was right." Like, why would anyone do that? Why would you say that you've got money and you're willing to spend it in that way? Now, the interesting thing somebody shared with me, because I'm still not on Twitter, so I'm not reading my timeline, but people do have been sending me bits and pieces, and I'm barely in the WhatsApp groups as well at the moment. And someone sent me something that said that I think it's only happened like 3 or 4 times that someone spent 100 million quid, you know, like Grealish, Declan Rice, or Grealish, Declan Rice.
Caicedo, Fernandes.
Yes, and the other guy at Chelsea. But there's clubs that haven't spent that amount on one player. I think Tottenham was one of them. I know United spent 100 million, but I don't know if it's actually 100 million because it's like 80, 90 million euro rather than it. Do you know what I mean? But the point of it was statistically, it's not a common thing. It's an incredibly rare thing at the very top of the Premier League in terms of the teams up there. So it's not something that clubs want to be doing for starters, because it's a lot to spend on one player. Also, let's just think about this pragmatically for a second. If Spurs have another good summer window, and maybe even include the January window of next season, right? Okay, just go that far ahead. And we are on the cusp. We're challenging. We're in the title race. We're contending. But we kind of fall short. Because we're not good enough. But we're not good enough because there's a team that's better than us, right? And you're looking at the squad and you're looking at the team and you're thinking, we've got depth. We can play in Europe. We can play in the Premier League. We are really competitive. We might have won a cup during all this as well. So we're on the right path. We're up there, but there's something missing. That then means that the next summer, you don't have to buy 3 or 4 players, okay? And I know, like football being football, you often do have to refresh to keep the squad, you know, at a particular level and competitive. But the point is, you would then look to spend the 100 million, which is what Arsenal, unfortunately, have gone and done. Declan Rice is not worth 100 million quid, but in the moment, they have that money to spend on that single player and they were able to do it as the missing piece. Now, if they fail to win the league this season, which I hope they do, and they probably won't win it, then it's a massive amount of money that's gone out on a risk and it's failed. But at least they've done everything in their power. Unfortunately, Man City exists and potentially a Klopp last dance is about to play out. So my point being is Spurs might be in the future be in a position where they're able to do that because they have that money to spend in that window. And it's the last piece in what they're aiming to do. So when Postecoglou is talking about we're not a club that's ever going to spend 100 million quid, for me, it's a comment that goes through one ear and comes out the other. And I just never think about it again until this moment where I've just decided to bring it up and pretend that I'm triggered by it. But you're completely right. Like you wouldn't advertise that. You wouldn't. And at the same time, Spurs are buying potentially players that could be worth 100 million, which is going to trigger other people because they're going to just suggest that, you know, that's Levy economics. We'll end up selling that player for 100 million, which is something that we are glad to do rather than sign someone for 100 million. But you know, you can moan and complain about the economics of the way Spurs are run as a football club until the cows come home. And, you know, I don't think there's a definitive answer on anything other than we have been bloody terrible at buying players in recent years, buying the wrong players for the wrong system or the right players for the wrong system and blah, et cetera, et cetera. However, we've also been incredibly good at signing players. And we're in a position now because of the work done by the club, Paratici, everyone else involved. And we're in this position now, celebrating and proud that we have these guys playing for us. So, talking of which, we spent a lot of money on Brennan Johnson. Now, I want your take on this, Chris, because he's been... There's like a pandemic of Spurs fans. I think some of them don't exist. I think some of them are burner accounts. I think some of them are trying to normalize a position where you are a Spurs fan, allegedly, and all you do is slag off everything about the club. And I don't believe those accounts are sincere. And the people that are real, they're actual people who think like that and slag everything off about the football club and the players all the time. I think they're attention-seeking supporters. I think they're barely supporters, but they're definitely attention-seeking. And Brennan Johnson being a target, I just always found weird. I think he's a shithouse. I love the way that he stands up to other players and he gets involved. He's got a bit of an edge to him. His goal contributions are spot on. He's scoring. He gets into positions to score. He assists. Is he perfect? No. Does he need to be stronger? Yes. Does he need to be more decisive? Yes. Was he thrown into the deep end? Yes. First season from Forest to Tottenham. Like, how do you think he's doing? And how happy are you with his output? And how high is that ceiling for him?
I think he's doing very well. Like you, I don't really understand the. I suppose it's every club needs, or every seems to have a fans need a scapegoat for someone to have a pop at. He seems to be one of those, like almost an easy option. Think that he's a bit of a soft touch or whatever. But I mean, you know, he turned the game last week, deserved his start yesterday. Thought he played very well. Took his goal well. I think for what he's done, so and like you said before, I think he was thrown in probably two. He certainly probably played a lot more minutes than Ange probably wanted or expected him to play, purely because of how many bloody players we've had injured across the season. I think he even said it himself yesterday that we haven't seen the best of him.
Yeah.
And he will just get, and he's still just a young lad. He will get better and better, and I'm sure as long as Ange is there, he will get better and better.
Yeah, completely agree. 27 games since the last time Aston Villa 27 games is the run of form where Aston Villa have scored at home, and they failed to score against Tottenham, which just again highlights how difficult it is to go to Villa Park. I know their form has dropped off a little bit this season. But then you've got Spurs. All our players, all our front three, contributing, scoring, assisting. Johnson, Son, Timo, Maddison, all involved. How good was it to see? I mean, obviously, Son was looking for because he loves a goal against Aston Villa. And he's looking for that finish, and he obviously got it. And then Timo comes on, and the goal that he scored against Palace was pretty easy, right? But this was a really neat finish from him, like instinctive. Obviously, sometimes we say this about Richarlison, when you haven't got that much time to think. As a striker, that's when you do the most damage because you just instinctively know where to plant the ball. I thought it was a lovely touch as well with Son pushing him towards the away supporters and telling him take a bit of time to celebrate with them lot, because obviously you couldn't do that against Palace because it was an equaliser at the time. Obviously, it was a cameo, but he's involved now, Timo.
Yeah, I mean, again, I kind of sort of almost saying where you'd be daft not to sign him now, to be honest, unless he picks up a bad injury or whatever.
Don't jinx it.
No, he's doing very well. It was a bad miss last week, but all players miss chances. He works hard. He did 2 goals and 4 assists now since he signed.
Yeah.
So he's getting involved, and it seems to be a good combination with him and Johnson to sort of, you know, both got pace to burn, and they're both doing very well. I've got no issues with either of them at the moment, really.
Where are you landing with Kulusevski? Because he's again, I always feel like when we talk about him, that he's always a level below what he can produce, but the level that he's at is still very productive. I mean, he was involved in a lot of the build-up play. He's so difficult to get the ball off. Yes, he's one-footed, but he's still so productive, and you just feel that he kind of gets a bit dizzy when he gets towards the penalty area and he's kind of positioning himself for a shot. And it's weird because he did that a fair bit in that first season under Conte. And he kind of lost that at the moment. I mean, in comparison to some of the other kind of player journeys, do you think he's underperforming, or do you think he's imperative to the way that we play? He just doesn't get that much of a spotlight on him than perhaps one or two other players.
I think it's very much that. I'm a massive Kulusevski fan. Yeah. I saw quite a bit on Twitter yesterday where he was getting a lot of abuse, but I mean, he's totally instrumental in the first goal. He started the moving for that, won the ball for the second one, set the third one up. I'm thinking, well, if you're going to play that badly every week, then I haven't got no real issue with it. You're going to essentially sort three goals out for every single game. He's the only player that can do what he can do for me. It's kind of, defenders just can't get the ball off him. Yes, he lacks a little bit of pace, but he's one of these players that does seem to go fast with the ball, if that makes sense. And again, he's a good option to bring in the midfield, to get, like last week, with him coming into midfield and then bringing Johnson onto the right-hand side. He's a clever footballer, and I just don't think he gets the credit he deserves, for me anyway. I mean, everyone has their favourites and things, but I just think he's a big asset to the squad.
They're all so young, Chris. Do you know what I'm saying? When you I was chatting to my dad about this, and it's like, how old is he? And he's like, bloody hell, they're young. Like, I know it's growing pains. It's you know, we do have experienced players in amongst it, but it's such a good combination, and it's one of these things again where, as frustrating as modern football is, and we'll come on to it on the Patreon part of the podcast, because I think the way our expectations have changed in terms of, as a collective again, like, we expect so much so quickly, and often, especially for a club like Spurs, we're very quick to, I wouldn't say knee-jerk, because most of the time we have a reason to be frustrated and disappointed. But when you do look at the positives at the club at the moment, you do think that what we need are tangibles that allow us to believe that we're actually going to meet the next objective in this kind of upwards journey. And I think thus far, especially as it's not been a full season, I think we're ticking all the boxes. Obviously, there are certain things that we're going to need to see improvements on. But individually, yeah, I mean, Saar, like we've spoken about, Basuma, we kind of know what he can do. At Bentancur, we definitely know what he can produce, but we're worried about whether he can rediscover that. I think we're in a good place for these players. So were you about to drop some knowledge bombs?
I think I just, when you were going on about other players and the burner accounts on Twitter and the abuse and things, I think that's probably where it falls on Kulusevski, a lot of them sort of blue tick, where people hide behind things and just throw out, because they get, the more interactions they get, the more sort of money they make off it and all that sort of thing.
There's a lot of...
isn't it?
Yeah, it is very easy. I mean, the thing that I saw was, oh God, what were they abusing? They were abusing Postecoglou, I think, after the first half, which was an overreaction anyway. But then I checked the timeline, so I did actually have a look. You know, silly of me to do it, considering I'm not meant to be looking at Twitter. But I had a look because I just knew what to expect. And I just wanted to, it was almost like, let me have a look because I know what I'm going to see. I'll mute this bloke. If I do come back to Twitter, I won't see this trash. And it was literally every other post was slagging someone off. And it was very performative. It's very over the top. Nobody has that many opinions. You can't scapegoat most of the team and the manager and Son and all these other people and think that people are going to take you seriously. Either it's a bot or it's someone that's kind of feeding this new age anger porn that you get on social media, where you think that the only way to digest and talk about football is to have this kind of super aggressive approach to everything. It's just a weird cartoon element that's kind of drained me of inspiration to really read anything on social media at the minute, which is a nightmare because I work in social media, so, you know, hence my headspace is completely fucked right now. So before we kind of end the normal pod, and I want to really talk about the 6% pay increase, the season tickets, what are we paying for in football these days? What is the experience we're paying for? Is it comparable to the past? Do we need to move on? Do we need to accept certain things? But at the same time, what the fuck is wrong with the football club? Are they that tone deaf that they don't realise there's a potential to still raise prices in some capacity, but also at the same time do something that brings the fan base in brings them towards this kind of collective agreement that we're all happy and we're all on the same page. They seem to have this inability to retain consistency with the relationship they have with us, and the relationship they have with us, let's be honest, is very, very superficial. And I want to dive into that because you're someone that goes to away games as well. And I think it's just an interesting thing, especially timing wise. They kind of released the statement on budget day, which was funny, and also without home game for 3 weeks, which I thought was definitely planned. And they've done some other shady things as well. And the senior concession thing is bizarre. So we'll delve into that. But I did want to touch upon an Aston Villa moment, the red card. For me, it's a red card, right? It's petulant. It's he's not going for the ball. He's going for the player, right?
Yeah.
So yeah. There's always this extra layer when it has to go to VAR. Well, was it endangering the player? We've seen really bad tackles and players get up and walk away from them. And then we've seen tackles where you think, nah, nothing's happened there, and the player's out. The player's done for 3 months, right? And you've seen tackles that are very, very bad and the player is badly injured. So it's obviously there's a bit of... it can be masked in the moment. Looking at something with your eyes, not in slow motion, in real time, and then working out where the player was, where the ball was, often instantly that's a red. And that's how I felt. And then I saw the slow-mo and my mind didn't change. Am I being biased? Was it a red card? Was it too harsh?
I think those sort of challenges should be red cards, but you just never see them. So for once, a fair play to the ref for actually producing the red card, because, like you say, he had no interest whatsoever in even trying to get anywhere near the ball. All he wanted to do was, he was clearly frustrated at probably his own performance, Villa's performance,
yeah,
and decided he was going to take it out on poor destiny. Those sort of challenges should be out, like totally outlawed, because he could have easily just snapped his leg or...
Oh, this is it. It's not like it was a mistimed tackle. It wasn't like it was clumsy. It's not like he was going for the ball, but he got it completely wrong.
It was like watching a petulant bloke on a Sunday morning. Yeah. That's what it was. So yeah,
you used to see that at Hackney Marshes when it was like a team of like pub players like in their late to early 40s, so late 30s, early 40s, and they're playing against like 19, 20 year olds, and they just can't keep up.
Deserves everything he got.
Lash out, studs up, 100%. And this is the guy that you mentioned. You know, he made this quote about it being the biggest game in Villa's recent history, just in terms of for them to consolidate, top four and kind of break away from the fifth spot. And he bottled it, and his team bottled it, which was lovely to see. Let's end it there. I'm having a look at my notes to see if there's anything that we kind of missed.
Are we going to talk Sonny either side of the
Yeah, let's start with Son on the Patreon part, and then we can go into the 6%. I did want to give a shout out to the Viking who came on and did two sublime pieces of skill.
He did.
In midfield. Did. And I think off the back of that, it's a 5-year contract we need to be offering this guy.
That's his perfect role, isn't it? Coming off the bench for 15, 20. he'll never accept it, and I fully expect he'll leave in the summer.
Yeah, but, he will.
You know, if he starts a game, and I can imagine Adam Nathan pulling his hair out, the thought of Højbjerg even starting a game, never mind coming off the bench, he's not the, you know, it's a player that isn't suitable for the system or the style of play that we play. But coming off the bench to see a game out for 15 minutes, I've got no issue. But like I say, I fully expect that he'll be out the door in the summer. And he'll head off to, I don't know, probably get a move to Juventus or somewhere like that.
I think he signed with a football agency that have connections to AC Milan. I think that's something that I saw somewhere. He's prepping for that. He's definitely going to be on the move in the summer. So Adam Nathan, if you are listening, mate, chill out. It's going to be okay. You know, go and lie down in preparation. Meditate, whatever you need to do. I heard you're pretty decent in the kitchen. Maybe cook something up. Right, let's end it there. On the Patreon part, where we'll speak a little bit about Son. I want to talk about Ange Postecoglou's Willy Wonka ticket quote from a previous presser to do with the Champions League. And definitely delve into this concession. I was going to call it concession conspiracy, but obviously it's just Tottenham being Tottenham, as Tottenham can only be. So we're gonna crack on with that. So for everyone else who's downloaded on all the free podcast apps, thank you for doing so. Thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. If you do want to support what I do, just go to patreon.com /spookyinpurgatory. And you can also get to listen to the next 20-25 minutes of this podcast. So catch you on the next one. Up the Spurs.